Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Oh, hello, friends.
Mr. Brian Brushwood.
Aloha and ciao.
And our producer extraordinaire, Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Hi, everybody.
We love to surprise Bryce every now and then with like battlefield promotions and stuff.
Commandant, Bryce Castillo. Yeah.
We made him like a partner on the show in the middle of the show. And he's like, I didn't sign off for this.
We turned to you like, you're the adjudicator now.
Well, I watched a lot of Veep and it felt like that. Like there was something really bad coming down and we're like, we need to bring somebody on board to have Fall Guy.
Our new director of taking the blame.
Yeah, any ensuing lawsuits that may be coming here.
You know, geez. Yeah.
The mastermind. This is not a funny thing. It's more of a messed up thing. And I just saw this. Said, maybe we talk about it because given our background and magic and stupid stuff, there's a headline that made it's out about a magician in India performing a stunt. Apparently, Chanchaha Lahiri goes by the stage name Wizard Mandrake, jumped into the Hooghly River on Sunday while tied up with rope and steel chains, and apparently has not been seen since then.
Ooh. Yeah, don't need Spiro and the Fudge on this one. It's sadly, it looks to me like an open and shut case that's truly tragic. I can't count the number of dumb things I tried because I assumed that it was just the way it looks and you just do the thing in my 20s and only in my 40s. Now that I have so much to lose with kids and everything that I understand like, no, magic should be very, very, very fake at all times.
And that's
also just a failure on safety precautions, right? Any kind of a trick like that. And it looks like that river has very, very, very low visibility, which hopefully should have made the precautions that much more stringent because you wouldn't be able to immediately there was the possibility that you could lose him in the water, but holy smokes, that is horrifying.
Man, you want to talk about like an ethical conundrum. We're looking at a BBC footage of him just before he dives in saying like, oh well, if I escape it's magic, if I don't it's tragic. Let's go do this. And it feels so ghoulish to look at this. There have been so many magic effects that have gone so awry. You know, the bullet catch claiming 12 lives. There's multiple stories of people doing buried alive. There was, did you ever see that one where the guy was like in a crystal casket and they were
Amazing
pouring
Joe.
Concrete over it?
Yeah, that was Amazing Joe, the concrete, yeah.
And then did you ever see, before Rudy Kobe became the king of Fox Magic for 20 minutes, they did this extreme magic where the dude was
Robert
in a
Gallup.
Yeah, that's right. He was in a cage and had to escape like as it fell from the sky, and he would either.
It was, I will say, objectively speaking, probably the best lie or best not lie, but best TV escape I have ever seen.
I agree, and in fact, I thought his whole show in a very kind of frat bro kind of way was extraordinarily good. And of course, you know, this is at the height of nacho cheese flavored Mountain Dew. Extreme was the tag word, but I thought it was a very good special all around. But the legitimate horror that was expressed by folks like Penn and Teller about it. I'm pretty sure he put his actual life in danger
for a TV special. Yeah. So what he did for our listeners is what Gallup did was he did an escape where he had a cage, a big cage. He was put inside of a mailbag that was suspended by like eight chains in the middle of this cage. And then it was pushed out the back of an airplane over the desert. And he had to get out of the mailbag, get to the out of the edge of the cage, grab a parachute, strap it on, and get out. Now, understand that, like, in magic, you know, when you see locks and chains and things like that, it's magic. But the physics of just saying, we're going to put you inside of this space here, push you outside here, and you've got to get out to there is insane, because you don't know if you push this thing out there, if the thing broke apart or one of the chains came loose and you started spinning. It was legit dangerous. It was legit dangerous. And that's every week people do motocross and things like that. And I understand Penn and Teller's point of view about like, and I, for me, I don't want to do that. But, you know, I think for what he did, it was like, I go like, man, this was the first time I watched something. I'm like, this is friggin' cool. Now there'd been others like Dean Gunnarsson had done straight jacket escapes and stuff and things like this from airplanes, which is cool. And Dean's amazing. But like this thing was just, you know, insane.
Yeah. So if you want to see it, you can just search Robert Gallup's Extreme Magic Challenge of the Death Dive.
Oh my God.
Like the idea that just hope that doorknob opens. Otherwise, you know, whether it's locked or not, that's the end of the story.
Oh my God. Yeah. I don't know if I've ever seen this. This is so insane. You can see everything that's happening. So it's not even like it's being pushed out of like a box that, you know, some, you know, you can kind of pre-work his way out of things and then sort of dramatically pop out. This is a cage that you can see through, and he's getting out of this mailbag. This is so insane.
Well, and plus also, like, even if there's no magic to it or no escapistry, it's like, okay, like you could quite literally make this the headlining act by just saying, I'm going to be in a bag and have to get out of a bag and then turn a doorknob and hope the door opens and get out. That alone, legitimately dangerous and horrifying enough and how does one even practice that?
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing to his point out is he's got his parachute's got his logo on it. It's amazing.
That's pretty good.
He's got his and credit to that skydiving team he worked with there. They're amazing. And that's one of the things that I may or may not be doing something could be regarded as stupid, but the people I worked with were super competent, you know, and know what they're doing. Like, you know, may or may not have something coming up. And like, you know, the guy who's there watching my own safety is a guy that's an experienced wingsuit diver, has done things like parachuted out of helicopters into shark infested waters and stuff. And so, you know, I get to sort of rest upon the experience of that person for a thing, you know, which is kind of what you want to do. Is if you're going to do something crazy and stupid, is go talk to people who've got a lot of experience doing crazy, stupid things.
Yeah. And on top of that is the confounding notion that even they get surprised by things.
Yep.
And but at least you have the benefit of not having walked in blind to a certain situation, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I have a friend who does the whole wingsuit thing, and he can, you know, there was a period like in like a couple, like 2 years, like all the top wingsuit guys died.
Yeah. You know? There was a moment, that we had a surprise on a Modern Rogue shoot last weekend. And I sort of declared to myself and to the team and to my wife that, all right, so from now on we have quote surprises on the show, but we never have capital S surprises. Like everything that we don't know for a fact how it's supposed to go, we run by scientists who will tell us exactly how it's supposed to go.
Yeah. So with the idea being previously there was part of the charm was Brian and Jason mix these two chemicals because they legitimately don't know what happens, where it's like maybe there was a discouragement of like, well, let's actually keep some of the organic surprise. And so let's not even do that extra 15 minutes of research to make sure what everything
well,
is.
Well, and in this case, we're wandering.
Let's do that.
We're wandering increasingly into territory where there is no previous research, you know, like we know what happens with one of these units, what happens with 100 of them. And it turns out that what can happen is drastically bigger, more explosive, possibly more surprising than what you would expect with you run into geometric progression where all of a sudden, you know, what is a jaunty effect with one unit at 100 all condensed together becomes suddenly an explosive.
And that's
a pipe bomb. Yeah.
And that's too, like, in like for Brian and I, sort of the position we're in is that, like, to do, I want to use the word level, but to do with the level of exposure, it's sometimes we're doing things, we're getting asked to do stuff. You don't get to do the thing that you did at the Cub Scout banquet. You know, you've got to sort of really push. You've got to push what you're doing into, you know, well, I've got to take it a little bit further, you know, and you, and that's the choice we made, is that we're going to push things a little bit further than it's done before. And the element of risk goes up, and you got to figure out what's the right amount of risk to do that. And there's a stupid amount of risk where the risk versus reward. And sometimes you look at a lot of this escape stuff that guys have died, and you're like, you know, you know, it's sad. You know, you see a guy who died, you know, for a local television show. You know, I died, you know, somebody did an escape for a local television show that a week later nobody would have talked about anyways.
Right. Well, and the real crime is, I try to in advance think, imagine when we finish this, if it goes awry, is there any point where somebody uses the phrase, well, I just figured, and if so... then I have more work to do before we do the thing. Yeah. So anything that goes, if at any point afterwards somebody will say the phrase, well, I just figured, then more homework is needed.
Yeah. We need to figure now.
Yeah.
You know, we need to do more figuring.
I remember my favorite thing from Penn Jillette said, whenever somebody says, I don't know what I got into my head.
Oh, geez.
Pay attention. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know what got into my head, but and like, well... there's your warning. Dangerous thought came about here. We've got a couple of people sent this in, and we thought maybe we should talk about this. Hey, what's 40,000 years old, mangy, and smells like really bad beef jerky?
Is it another frozen woolly mammoth?
No, Brian, no. Severed a wolf's head, a 40,000-year-old wolf's head they found.
What?
Apparently, mammoths aren't the only thing that we pull out of the tundra in the ice. Researchers have now found. Pull this up. This is a.
It's surprisingly well preserved.
Yeah,
honestly.
It's disturbingly well preserved because it feels like somebody's pet. But of course, like I know this is a wild animal from before. Man. Anybody had wolves as pets?
Like, looking at that picture makes me really think that Captain America would be possible.
that if only the rest of the dog body was there, he'd wake up and want to start punching Nazis.
Well, that was 40,000 years, right? Like, all he had was like 50.
So apparently they say they may have also found an ancient cave lion cub.
Cave lion, wow.
You know, a cave lion.
Oh, yeah.
You ever know what you're going to find there? And so, you know, the question I think one of our listeners wanted to know was like, hey, what are the concerns about like bringing back diseases and stuff? Like, because there's this, you
know. So funny that you said that, because I was just having that thought about pathogens and whether or not that would be a whole thing.
Can they survive for that long in that cold of a temperature?
Well, I mean, if they were, tardigrades, is that what they're called? I mean, there's a lot of critters that can.
Yeah. Very simple ones. So let's look up frozen virus. Let's see what we see. This welcome to Google things. Bacteria, things like a lot of things can come out of the permafrost. So they say they've been able to resurrect a giant virus from a 30,000-year-old ice core.
Wow.
So
frozen giant virus still infectious after 30,000 years.
Oh, got it. Still got it. Classics never die.
Yeah.
We, I think we talked about this. I want to say it was a Radio Lab where they were talking about how, we're all worried about current generation of antibiotics being not effective, and we're starting to see, you know, resistant bacteria strains or whatever. And there was a Radio Lab story where they took a 400-year-old recipe and they just followed it exactly. They grabbed the onions, they got a brass bowl, they said the number of Hail Marys in between each thing, and then it turned out to be like super effective against resistant bacteria basically. And that there's a story there where what did have a natural immunity 30,000 years ago and was not very effective and everybody just had it in them gets loose in 21st century America where we are not prepared for it.
Well, you know, the people who appear to be immune to the HIV virus,
mm-hmm.
The origins, the one of the theorized, and again, this could have been discounted by now, but the last I read, they traced back their genetic history, and it was to like some region in like northern England or group that the town that had wiped out by the plague, and these were the survivors, descendants of the survivors.
This was the genetic lineage of like, mm-hmm. We survived that, so we're literally impervious.
It's a very interesting. Thing, but then they had in China, they engineered the HIV proof. They used this, I think, the same genes to create babies that were supposed to be immune to HIV. Well, it turns out with that genes also comes shorter lifespans.
Oh, wow.
Between you, me, and the wall.
Born in China that have shorter lifespans, but hey, they're not going to get HIV.
I mean, yes, shorter lifespans, but man, what a life. Let him just go anywhere, do anything.
No rules for you, kid.
Well, there's still other diseases that you can get, though. So, you're going to still have to use precaution.
All right. Oh, there's always got to be one, right, Brian? You're trying to let these Chinese kids live their best life.
Go back to teaching volleyball, coach. We'll handle health from now on.
Syphilis never hurt anybody.
You want to know what else never hurt anybody? Heading on over to patreon.com/weirdthings where you can support this show. Not only do you get the satisfaction of keeping this show on the air each and every week, making sure that you always have fresh weird things right in your ear hole, but also you get the After Things podcast early. You get that before anybody else. So head on down. Why don't you? patreon.com/weirdthings.
Speaking of old things that are like old and stuff, you guys ever heard of a Krenog?
A Krenog?
Krenog.
I swear to God, a Krenog would be something that I would not be shocked had a 2-block line because they started serving it randomly at some coffee bar.
Is it? You said Chrono?
Carnog.
Oh, Krenog. Okay, so it's not like a time thing. I was like a Krenog. A Krenog. Yes, it is the world's smartest six-legged mammal.
Yes, Brian.
Nailed it.
Got it. It looks like an artificial island made of rocks put in the middle of a lake or a river or whatever, okay? But it could be the mammal thing. So anyway, they find these in Scotland. They find these in the northern part of Britain and stuff, in the middle of lakes and stuff, big piles of stones that people put there. Now, the thing about them was that they'd said, oh, maybe they're like, 100 years old, a few hundred years old, whatever. Now they've started to date some of them, and they find out these things, some of them are like 5,000-6,000 years old. Right?
That makes sense. And it's astonishing what happens after over a very long time period. I guess the idea is what? At some point, one of these, is it a lake or a lock or whatever, is low enough that somebody wants to kind of start an island, but then the water levels rise, and then, or are these human made or natural?
Yeah, they're human made.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, yeah. Wow.
Well, that's so, Brian. What you just touched upon is they were like when they were maybe like 600-700 years old or 1,000 years old or whatever. Like, oh, okay, like we'll just build an island there. But the period at which they're now finding them from come from when we were dealing with the rising climate change from the melting glacial periods. And so it may very well have been, you have to think of, a lot of things. And when you start going further back in history, you really got to understand how much you got to think of how much the geography has changed. There's an island in like one of the southernmost islands of Britain. Historically speaking, during the Roman times, it was known as having a large farm. Now it's too small to have a farm. And that's because the water levels back then were lower and you could have a farm there. And so that was just within the last 2,000 years this has happened. But you go back 4,000 or 5,000 years, and what did this environment look like? And so you're looking at ancient examples of people maybe building islands, and they could have been, I wonder if they were like, a fort, maybe something you built because, to protect yourself.
Well, for strategic reasons that makes sense. Yeah. It's funny how you think about that stuff. Like, we grow up like castles have moats around them. But then when you think about it tactically, it's like, man, a moat makes a lot of sense. That's mm-hmm. a really smart design choice.
Yeah, people back then hated water. Like, I don't want to get clean.
And nowadays, too, you know, keep in mind that the United States is in an extraordinarily privileged position by being surrounded essentially by a gigantic moat and friendly, largely democratic countries on each side. I mean, it's that matters. And you wouldn't think it would that much. But, you know, compare that to the Middle East where everything is – you know, just a straight drive to invade anyone any direction, that's problematic.
Well, it's like Europe, why everybody speaks so many languages, because those borders changes so much.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so it's just an interesting example of how, hey, people a long time ago were really kind of smart and built things and did things. They weren't just like sitting around going, well, you know, a couple more thousand years, we'll get iPhones. I don't know.
Just going to disappear on this rock island.
Yeah, I'm going to do my rock cast. Hello, welcome.
Welcome to Rock Things. Over here we got some, I don't know, lighter colored rocks. Over here some darker colored rocks. Today we're going to do a wacky experiment. Welcome to the modern rock. Hey man, what happens if you smash two rocks together? Ah, they broke apart. Ah, nobody saw that coming.
We think about like Lascaux, like the Lascaux caves, you know, with the paintings on the wall and stuff. Was that like Disneyland back then? Like, we're going to take you to this cool thing. You're going to go down a tunnel and you're going to see lions and bears and, oh my God, I can't wait. You know, and you go in there and the fire's burning, you know, and maybe some people are singing a little theme song and you go open it up and you're like, it's like, you know, amazing. Because, I mean, like they said with the fire, the flickering flames, it may have looked like the animals were moving.
I mean,
totally. If you've never seen that in your entire life, like, of course. Yeah, that's high definition.
That's awesome. They're VR.
Hell yeah.
So anyhow, it's worth checking out, though. Like, we're getting a lot more information now about a period of history that previously we didn't know a lot about because – so much climactic change had happened then. And, you know, we've talked a bit before about Doggerland, that area of land between Britain and Europe, which now we're getting more archaeological evidence about this. And it's fascinating. That deep history is interesting. You don't have to go to the kooky, crazy stuff to realize that there's a lot of neat, there have been people on this planet for a long time. And, you know, we're looking at this map right now, the Bryce brought up of Doggerland. And this is a map of Europe where Britain and Europe are all connected. Ireland's connected. You have tributaries and rivers going all the way out. The Isle of Man, all of it is just one big, massive continent.
Yeah, and there's just a gigantic ice sheet over, you know, Scotland and Ireland.
Yeah, not much has changed in some parts of that. And it's fascinating because you look at, like, you know, from – you could, you know, almost look across, you know, from that land to Norway, you know, so – and it's so much of human history and human civilization happened during that period of time, and it's now below the water. And as the water levels raised, you had displacement of people moving from place to place. And so you look at these Cernogs and you're thinking, like, hey, like, could be defensive because all these lowland people coming out of the Doggerland were maybe looking for new lands, new territories and stuff.
Yeah, I'd imagine if you're moving into a new neighborhood, a little bit worried about being chased off by the current occupants, you know, you got your wife, your kids, and your extended family. I'd imagine you'd prefer to be surrounded by water and your spears pointed outward as you sleep with one eye open.
Yep.
Sitting on your rock island.
Yeah.
Keeping an eye.
Come at me, laddie. I'm ready for you.
Wow, we have done how many episodes of this show? And I think I've done podcasting with you for a very long time, Brian. I don't think I've ever heard you bust out that accent before.
I do an okay Irish. I've never tried a Scottish live on air. This was podcast
that
history.
It worked.
It was good. Now it's time for Weird Things Confessions.
Oh, thank goodness.
Oh, geez. All right. Yeah. Finally.
Yeah.
All right. I'll go first.
Oh.
I'm really trying to like season 2 of Cobra Kai.
Oh. All right, here's mine. Good Omens sucked.
Oh, ow. Ow.
It's confessional. Confessional.
More like Bad Omens.
Oh. I can never make it as a Catholic minister. just my saying. Judgment, like, it radiates.
Maybe we could stretch. Maybe we could stretch that kid in the woods for 4 episodes, doing the exact same thing over and over again.
Oh. Bryce, do you have anything you want to
say? Didn't realize it was going to be a real bit. By the way, pass. I see you in the chat. I see you in the chat. Says, "Oh, I was going to watch that.
Watch it.
Definitely good. Watch it. I loved it. I think you'll be in or out in the first 10 minutes. Would it be fair to say, Justin, that you found the first 10 minutes cloyingly overly?
I was meh over the first 2 episodes. I legitimately really got annoyed with it as it went down the stretch in the final 3 or 4 episodes.
Oh
Okay, I have a little confessional. I think I really like those Happy Death Day movies, and I think I would watch another one if they made it.
Wait, what?
the Happy Death Day movies, Groundhog Day,
the college. Yeah. It's. I think I like them. I think I like them. Every time I think about it, I go, yeah, that was fun.
There's something about. There's sometimes movies you go, oh, it's silly, but then you're like. They know exactly what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know about that, but sometimes you get like, man, they know exactly. They're on set. They know what they're making. They know what they're trying to do. And they're just trying to fulfill the best that you can do with that.
Yeah.
And you know, I like that. My confession is I am addicted to meth.
Wow. All right. So, second to my good omens, Rip, but
wait, I mean by meth, I mean my Oculus Quest.
Oh, congratulations. We have talked for 10 years about all the reasons that Andrew does not play video games. And chief among them is because he is like a terrier. Once he gets his jaw clamped down, he will not let go. And he has done a very good job of inoculating himself, keeping himself sequestered from the best and brightest of video games. He refuses to play Hearthstone. He thought somebody backdoored you, man. They told you.
All of you have only heard tale. I was there. I was on the ground during the lost summer to Tiny Tower.
Tiny Tower!
This is a legit problem for Andrew that he cannot handle it.
I did play Hearthstone. I go, wow, this is really fun. Deleting.
I don't blame you, man.
I've talked about this before in other episodes. The reason I bring it up again is for me to have 3 weeks in to be still talking. Like, I have a Nintendo Switch somewhere collecting dust, which is amazing, you know, but I played Breath of the Wild and I'm like, oh geez, I don't want to, if I spend 30 hours on this game, I will hate myself. I will really, really hate myself. So I have it and I spent 2 hours on it. I said, that's it. The Quest, man, I've been using this thing every day.
Well, if I can make you feel better about your newfound addiction, you're very productive when you're on meth. And in this case, VR is a legitimate tool that will reshape the next 100 years of humanity. So I'm going to say that to explore what's possible now and to think about what will be possible 10, 50, 100 years from now is not the worst way to waste your time.
Are you hearing this?
To your significant other?
Well, but this is also, you were saying your significant other also has gotten into things.
A little bit.
Yeah,
more self-control than I. She has more control than I have.
Is there any game, and forgive me if we, for all I know, we actually talked about it and I managed to forget about it, but is there any game that just has you put on the Quest, walk around and get a map of your house and then reskin everything as a horror movie or something else?
There's not, what you can do is you can put on the Quest and you can map out your area and you can use that as your space when you walk around. So let's say if you're playing Vader Immortal, and if you have a large area, you can walk around the entirety of the spaceship or chambers and stuff or areas. And I've even done weird carve out through my doorway into the other room and done that for some stuff. There is not yet a game that's been released that does that, but there are stuff in development that they've seen. I think we showed this on here It's like two guys went around. It was called like shared. It was the shared space demo, and it was basically they built a basically a framework to be used in other games. They did it in their office where they just turned their office into the spaceship level environment. And, you know, you going up elevators, going through, and it was like a quick demo they put together, but it looks amazing. And yeah, we're looking at it there. So what this is, we saw this before, and what this is they just mapped this to their own office environment. And so what the game does is, from what I understand, is they're walking through here, and then it's going to happen. They go into an elevator, and the elevator just puts them, the pretend elevator puts them on a new floor. But it does.
It occurs to me that an elevator is a pretty good trick to go to a new floor and then the back door opens. So it tricks you into turning back around and walking forward as you lose your spatial awareness of the actual office that you're in.
Yeah. And I mentioned this before, too, was that I did a demo at USC has their MXR lab, which they've been pioneering a lot of tech for VR. And I did a cool demo there years ago where problem was a lot of their development funding was coming for the government. So you're in an Iraqi village with a gun walking around and you're searching the village for guns and you walk into a hut. And when you walk in there and you start searching things, the door you walked in through moves so that you walk through.
While you're not looking. So when you have to go back, you have to adjust for it.
You're not supposed to notice it. I noticed it, which to the frustration of the guy who created it. But hey, magician. But the idea was to make.
Not hey, magician. Hey, specifically Andrew Main, the guy who saw the preview for Super 8 and called the cinematographer to ask, "Is the monster in the water tower?"
It was the preview. It was the poster. He got it in the poster.
Point is, it was really cool. It was cool, though, because it allowed you to have this you're in a 15 by 15 foot space, but it let you feel like you're going through an entire like village.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's what we're going to be seeing is taking small spaces, making them bigger.
So I've got a question for you. Your excitement of the three of us, you were the first to be insanely excited about VR. And yet you did not take the leap. And I don't know if it was a fear of the commitment to gaming or what have you. But Justin and I bought the Vive. How much of your current infatuation with the Quest is a latent interest that just hadn't been satisfied until now because you set out the Vive Generation 1?
Well, remember, I was the first one to experience the Vive.
Correct, but you didn't buy one.
You set out
as Justin and I tried to goad you into getting one.
I had the Oculus development system, the development kit when that first came out. I had one of the developer editions of that. I came close to doing the same thing with the Vive, but it was just a time thing. My issue is that I thought that the Vive solution was janky for where I knew the tech was going to be. For being able to do room detection and stuff.
Yeah.
And I felt that like cables and stuff were kind of right, cool.
But that's not my question. My question is, how much of your current infatuation with the Quest is the fact that you are now experiencing totally diving into all the greatest hits of VR? You're playing all the games because you have a good system.
I have friends like in VR stuff. So I've been going visiting studios and stuff and playing stuff and done, you know, I've done like behind the scenes stuff, some stuff NDA I can't talk about.
So are you asserting that the Quest is special in its addictiveness? Would Justin and I dive in as hard as you are?
I think that for me, the thing that made it, and again, I'm trying to figure out like, the thing that got me the most excited was early on, you know, being in Burbank, I get to see cool stuff in Los Angeles. So I got to see cool stuff. The first time I did an untethered, I did Vive and I did tethered. I loved Vive first time I did it, first demo. Loved it. I'm like, this is great, but I don't like on this cable in the back when I turn around and I feel limited. When the first time I did a completely untethered VR experience, NDA, I was like, oh, this changes it. This is really because I'm turning around and I'm moving. I'm never consciously aware of moving thing. I'm not afraid that I'm going to step outside of a boundary or anything, or going to have something pull on me or fall over, whatever. That sense of self-consciousness was gone. And then with the Quest 2 was the fact that it's, you just put it on and it's on. It sits on the counter and it's on. There's no, let me go turn this thing on or hook this thing up or load this thing up. It's always on. If I'd had a dedicated room and I had, you know, maybe the tether, like some of the places I've done like really cool tethered VR stuff, you had the tether going up to the ceiling and doing there. And that was kind of cool. But for this was, it's just, it's like, you literally just walk up, put the thing on, and you're into it. You don't have to do it. It automatically turns on all those little, all of those, getting rid of all those little steps are what helps.
I think that's, you know, and probably to why Andrew didn't dive into the Vive. If the Vive did not require a new PC at certain specs that cost a certain amount of money, that require now, all right, I got to carve out this amount of space in my living area. Like, that's the macro. The micro is, even when you want to play it, you're like, oh, okay, well, let me load up Steam and let me start this thing, which it's like, if you are already a hardcore gamer and you are playing through Steam all the time, mm-hmm. then that's less of an issue. If you are not, like I am not, then it's definitely like, all right, like, me doing VR is like, let's, it is the same mental preparation for, I'm going to throw a dinner party. Like, I need to clear the living room and I need to make sure that we have paper plates. Like, there's just a lot of stuff that you need to think of, even on the micro level, that seems eliminated with the Quest. That it just, it's a thing. You look at the thing and you're like, oh, I remember when fun happened, when the thing is on my head. You put the thing on your head and now fun's happening.
Yeah, I think, and that's, I think that's the, that's a really good way to point out, because, like, yeah, if somebody who's already got your gaming rig set up and everything's like this and it's there to watch, it's not as big of a difference. But one of the things happening, though, with the Quest is, because you have totally unrestricted movement, because there is no cables, different kinds of games and things like that are possible. You know, is that Beat Saber is an amazing, it's a great game. It's like, you know, but we need, you know, 100 more killer apps like that for VR to really be a thing. Now that you can spin around in place and move around without worrying about your cord, what are we going to see now?
Yeah.
You know, because Beat Saber still, you're facing forward, kind of doing this thing. You know, Pirate Trainer, you're spinning around, you know, and shooting stuff. But now that you can just walk around, or you can go into space, spin around, never worried about a cable. And that's, I think, what's kind of super, super exciting for that. But again, like, yeah, I think, Brian, I think it's going to be, it'll be cool for you, but not as...
Right. I guess that's what I'm trying to gauge, yeah. is if you already own a Vive and you have already been through that 6 month love affair with VR, and we use it less now, like, would you advise somebody in the position of Justin or Brian to immediately run out and buy a Quest?
No, if you're not feeling the burn and desire, no. I think Justin will get more out of it than you do.
So I have a question. What if somebody made an app for the Quest that was just called Antisocial, and it was designed to just basically take all of the input of the cameras and just map units of humans over it as a generic thing, so that you could go walk out in the world and walk a few miles with a toaster on your face and ignore everybody and have no expectation of anybody interrupting you?
There might be somebody you need to talk to.
Come on, man. Just as, if for nothing else, the novelty of just trying that, you wouldn't give that a try?
Well, the Quest, as far as like super bright daylight, the IR doesn't work as well, so it wouldn't quite, but you, and you're not real. I don't know if the API will let you do like a real person occlusion yet. But taking your point, You could build, I mean, right now you could take an iPhone and you could build using like a Gear or one of those, just the headset things. You could take an iPhone and just do face detection, and you could block people out right now with that. Or you do the same with an Android. I mean, you could do the Android and you could use their AR core. You could do that right now. Man. You can make everybody look like cartoon characters.
I mean,
imagine if everybody looked like Rick, you know, from Rick and Morty or something.
I feel like this is a within the next year headline on Gizmodo, is watch this guy spend an entire day walking around San Francisco not recognizing other people as human, and just, you know, just dude with the toaster on his face, Oculus Quest walking everywhere.
Well, you know, so there's the thing. So when we go to, I talk a little about Worldwide Developer Conference, which Apple just had, and they showed, we talk about the real-time occlusion.
Yeah.
And then the big deal about that is that lets you really put objects into your real environment, like really feel like it's there because things move behind whatever. Now, if you have a point, and Apple's clearly moving towards like next year, so launching their own AR glasses, you know, putting on these AR glasses and walking around and doing the things that you talked about, that, Brian. And that's a weird thing. It's like, what if I want my AR glasses to like have this. I say, you know what? I'm a grump. I always have resting a-hole face, but I'm a happy guy. So I want my status to be happy. So when people look at me through the AR, I'm smiling.
Yeah. Oh, man. Imagine 150 years from now that a piece of legislation, you know, a few years back we had the right
now, legislation, Brian. Jeez.
There was the Right to Be Forgotten bill that passed in Europe. The idea of like, hey, man, old stuff, you can say Google. Let's make that not a thing. And then Google has to cooperate.
That was scary.
Correct. But imagine 150 years from now, it's like, look, I'm a happy person in my soul. I'm sorry that my face happens to be born this way with this dour resting expression. I have the right for the inside me to be what everybody sees. And you can dictate like, hey, I'm going to press this button and all people need to see me as happy, or all people need to see me as 50% more muscular than I am, or a different race, or any of that stuff.
My life is unfairly maligned because I have this face. I deserve to have the true me shine through. My name is OJ Simpson.
Congratulations. The true you is shining through A-OK.
I think that we're certainly going to see, as body augmentation continues to develop, as genetic therapies improve, and we live in a world in the physical space, you could look like what you want. In the virtual space, you'll be able to look like – and the idea of even having a physical, this is what you look like, I think will mean less, you know. I think that will be – it'll be interesting, you know, and your virtual you versus the real you. And, you know, any of you guys watch the latest season of Black Mirror?
I am two-thirds of the way through.
First episode, yeah.
The striking – they're randomizing the episode order, so you kind of have to talk about the name of the episode when you –
Striking Vipers.
Striking Vipers.
Oh, yeah. No, that – man, yeah. Those Vipers. Woo! They strike.
Yeah, they strike.
Do you guys want to talk about that now or an after things, or because
let's go to picks.
Certainly I'll you know, give a tip of the hat to the old Black Mirror. I guess my big pick would be last week it was Good Omens. I got a pick for you. 12 Angry Men really holds up. It's 60 plus years old. And I showed it to – it was me and my 11-year-old. It's currently streaming on Amazon Prime, and it was electric. And there's a couple of great gotcha moments where, you know, they get somebody, you know, to break down and admit that he's a racist, and they get somebody else to, you know, admit that just saying I'm going to kill you doesn't mean that somebody should go to jail. And those moments I spent – most of the time watching the movie because I had never seen it, but watching my daughter's reactions was just as fun. Highly recommended. I mean, find the time, carve it out, jump in.
It just got a thumbs up here in the room, by the way, too, from somebody else who's a big fan. And I remember seeing it ages ago. If you write really good, relatable human conflicts, really, if your characters are real and realized, it's a very true story for its time, or it's idealized for its time, but I'm saying it's the right degree of grittiness for it, you know. And it's just people acting smart is always a good recipe for writing stories.
My favorite bit was the moment where they do the whole 5 minutes where it's very clearly a racist motivated thing. You don't know which race. You don't know if they're Irish or Scottish or Icelandic or Nordish. Sorry, I wanted to do all. the point is it's so universally written that it has a punch despite being specific, which I thought was really, really good.
Very cool.
I guess I'll go with Black Mirror. I've only watched one episode, but
which one?
The Striking Vipers, but you know, it's a look. It is a continually interesting and inventive program, and I also just love the fact that now it exists in this place where it just gets such great casting too. You just find like awesome actors.
And I'll co-sign season 5. They have 3 new episodes this year, and they're different. I think they're kind of a little different from maybe especially the first few seasons of Black Mirror, they're definitely not as depressing or dour. But they but they do some interesting things, right? Like the Miley Cyrus episode is very good, but it's also basically a Disney Channel movie. But that also is like a new type of story for Black Mirror to tell. It's interesting.
It merely went into a very morally complicated instead of dystopic torture porn.
Yeah, yeah.
I only saw Striking Vipers. I started watching the second one, and my crit with the show, and the reason I didn't finish the second one yet, is the pacing for me is glacial.
Yeah, they're Striking all very
Vipers
long.
Could have been 20 minutes shorter, and I watched the second one, and I'm like, oh my God, they're doing the thing again where I'm going to spend 15 friggin' minutes and it's not going to get anywhere, and I'm going to forget about this part because it doesn't effing matter.
Can I throw a crazy idea, a Weird Things idea at you? I was going to make a glib joke about like, well, that's why you play Hearthstone while you watch it. And then it hit me like, maybe that's exactly what they intend, is that none of these are meant to be watched with your full attention. These are all meant to be consumed while you're doing something else. And if that's the case, then all of a sudden the pacing doesn't seem outrageous at all. Because, I mean, look, you know, as you're, you know, turning to take another turn on your simulated card game, it makes sense.
Maybe, but like the other episodes have been really well placed. I think it's because they're contractually obligated to deliver like an hour long episode. They're going to do it even if there's not. They feel stretched. They just feel intentionally stretched to me.
And all three are longer than 60 minutes, which I think is probably too long for all.
Yeah, Rabbitus 12 asks, is late to the game, you know, is Black Mirror basically like the Twilight Zones? Yeah, specifically the idea of technology being the focus with the Black Mirror being, you know, the Black Mirrors that we all stare into every day in the form of our cell phones.
Yeah, you know, I think that this is also kind of a hallmark of our modern era of streaming stuff and people becoming popular, the money being so high, the creative control being what it is, that there are a lot of things. And I've noticed it specifically with some of the Amazon originals that like the pacing isn't fantastic sometimes, but the sets are amazing. Like the money is so high that they'll just take the time to do the crazy tracking shot of this like third most important character's apartment that looks like a set from Harry Potter because it's so well done, but you don't really need it. You don't need to spend that much time there for the story, but yet that's what they want to do is show everything because the money's there.
Yeah, Amazon has a new series from Nicholas Winding Refn who did Drive and Neon Demon, and it's this like 13 episode series, and every episode is like almost an hour and a half long, and it's, you can just feel like nothing was cut. It's all like, you get like it was hard for me to watch just even the first episode because it's so just,
well, that's a dude who does not have any respect for your or anyone's time.
Right,
he's like telling exactly what I want to tell with exactly the kind of face, and Amazon's like, that's great, we get to put Drive from the maker of Drive on a series. That's awesome. People will definitely hang on to their primes now.
Apparently, they ordered 10 hours from him, and he gave them 13.
Wow. Turns out it's all slow television. It's a train ride to Copenhagen.
I mean, some of those shots.
Strike it Rich, is there a Twilight Zone remake in the works? There's a Twilight Zone remake on right now on CBS All Access.
So rush right out, friends.
Yeah.
So I got to pick this. I've talked about this before, and it's back with the new season. And I managed to watch it all over the weekend because it's very short. But it's season two of Agretzko on Netflix,
yeah,
the Sanrio show.
So Agretzko.
Agretzko. Yeah.
No.
Yes.
Agretzko.
Yeah.
No. Agretzko.
No. It's Agretzko.
There's no, the U is not pronounced.
It's a short sound,
Agretzko.
Agretzko.
Huh. I don't hear the U in there, but
battle.
I mean, look,
I mean, you can correct me. I mean,
no, look, only one of us One of us is a little bit more infatuated with Japanese stuff than me.
He resigns. You are not. I'm not going to allow you to get into a Japanese pronunciation contest with this man. The man who sings Japanese language karaoke.
Yes, correct. So, look, I understand what waters I accidentally waded into, but I guess I'm just surprised that for as often as we've covered this on Court Killers, I've not been corrected for calling it Agretsuko beforehand.
But season two is really interesting. So season one was all about, like, you know, she's dealing with this office job. It's her boss is being kind of an ass to her. She's dealing with annoying coworkers and trying to find, you know, meaning in life. And season two is really strong because it kind of focuses on pressure from her mother to go get married, which is another societal pressure for women in Japan.
I did watch the first half of the first episode with the dress.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, but I want to do a little Google Translate here. Let's see what it says.
Agretsuko.
Oh, wait, okay. Yeah. Come on,
Emily Google.
Oh, in your face. How now, atheist?
But there's
kind of sound like both of you, actually.
But there's something really great in the second half of the season where, I mean, she's trying to find love, and she's doing these things like going to speed dating, or she's doing these like her mother's trying to set her up for like an arranged marriage, and she meets a guy, and suddenly the show is making a really strong, I don't know, it's making a very interesting perspective on automation and artificial intelligence and like the...
And redundancies and all that?
Yeah, wow. Yeah. And I think that in itself is also very cool. And the way that the season ends is also very nice. I think this is just a really great show. And I think it would be, it's a kid's show. Like, it's Sanrio makes it, the people who make Hello Kitty.
Yeah, you know what's funny is you can't access it from the kids zone.
And I think that's probably, it's headier than that, I think.
Okay, what's weird is my daughter can access Black Mirror.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, that's weird.
like she's going through and she's logged in as Callie. This is my 6-year-old.
Yeah.
And she had come over and watched just enough of the Miley Cyrus episode that I was like, it gets creepy and weird. You don't want to see this. And so she left. Yeah. And so she's like, Dad, look at the recommended feed. And there it was. Wow. Freaking Black Mirror on my 6-year-old's recommended feed, logged in as a 6-year-old in the kids section.
That's weird. So yeah, I because I was watching this and I kind of had the same feeling about season one, where it's really heady stuff and it looks like it's for kids, and I think maybe teenagers would be good for it, but I don't think it would be good for younger children.
My 11-year-old is just infatuated and in love with it.
I think that's probably a fine age, but Callie's not going to get anything out of this.
Correct. But also Josie, I mean, you know how Josie tends to skew a little more. We watched, you know, Poltergeist the other day and she loved it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Agretsuko on Netflix.
All right. I have a pick and it's a shock pick.
Is it The Quest?
Ladies,
I mean, for me, nobody else will really care, but for me, and again, it's not like, oh, this is amazing. It's more of a soft, like, yeah, if you're into this, you might really like this. And my God, it got so much better. Every time somebody says, oh, no, the show got better, I'm like, no, it didn't. And it's categorically true. Every time somebody's told me a show got better, I've never found these things to get better. I go like, oh, maybe it's slightly better, but it's the things that annoy me aren't there.
So a show that you didn't like that people are like, oh, no, but it really, you got to really wait till season 5. That's when it really takes off.
Yeah, and it's like, well, no, you're so invested in it at that point. I will say this got better. The writing got less dumb, and it got less convoluted. The stuff that drove me nuts the first season about it being overly dumb, overly convoluted, and doing plot points I just didn't care as much about, and that could have been good but wasn't. Star Trek Discovery.
What?
Wow. This is it. This is shocking.
I would say comparing it to what we've had for Star Trek on TV, you know, it's better than, you know, your seasons of Enterprise and way better than a lot of other stuff. And it's gotten the writing's gotten better. It's gotten better. I mean, it's not like, hey, everybody got to watch the shows. I'm not like other shows are amazing, but if you're kind of into Star Trek and maybe you were just, and like, I thought Orville started, I liked Orville first season. It was fun and quirky. Now Orville takes itself too damn seriously and it's not fun for me. I couldn't finish Orville because it was just too preachy, just too, all right, shut up already. And then Discovery has been, they kind of swapped, you know, I've enjoyed, been enjoying Enterprise, excuse me, been enjoying Star Trek Discovery, you know, so.
Cool. Yeah, we've talked about Discovery quite a bit on the Cord Killer side. And one of the things that, we realized was, you know, in the beginning, it was presented as sign up for CBS All Access so that you could watch Discovery, which sounds insane as the single, you know, quote unquote, legitimate new offering on the platform at the time. But now that the back catalog grows longer and longer and longer, all of a sudden feels like, well, yeah, this month I'll just do all of Discovery and I'll mm-hmm. sign up. And then once you sign up for a thing, it's kind of hard to unsubscribe.
Yeah. Somebody in the chat room said that I like the half the second season and really just like that. I haven't watched the other half yet, so I may pull this back. I may bring this recommendation back and just say, gentlemen, I have to declare this false. But I've been like blown away, but I've been like, oh, you know, watch a little Star Trek and not go, why is everybody acting so stupid? Why are they making such dumb decisions? So, you know,
Star Trek is one of those franchises where like competence enough, like people just want it in their lives. Just don't make it bad. It can just.
Yeah. Yeah. I watched another new CBS Full Access show, which I won't get into. And I watched one episode was really good and the other episode was so bad. I'm like, do you even know the genre you're writing? You know, and it can be frustrating, but anyhow, that's it. It's been weird.
Okay. I said, because I was going to ask, what was your recommendation? Oh, that's right. Yours was Black Mirror, Justin. Got it.
Yeah. Mine was Black Mirror.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't do it. It's not been weird.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.